Bear Down Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. Your Bears content daily, Monday through Friday. Pat the Designer back at it again. And on today's episode, we got Tyler Aki in the building with us, friend of the show, always keeping it real whenever he comes through. And we got a lot to talk about today, Tyler. We got Adam Schefter scaring the bejesus out of Bears fans because he says Caleb Williams likes to do his contract situations a little atypical. Should we be worried or not? And now we're going to talk about the play calling situation in the NFC North. Bears have some competition. I mean, when you look at the offensive play calling in the North right now, there's some dogs out there and there's some quarterbacks to go right along with it. So we'll talk about all that more on today's episode of the Chicago Bears podcast. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave that 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. Tyler, how are you doing, my guy?
What's going on, Pat? It's always fun to talk a little football, and you can feel like the football is in the air right now. I mean, what are we, a week out from rookies reporting to camp? Oh, yeah. That's when you know it's real. It hit me last week over the weekend that it was like, damn, the Bears play a game in less than a month. Like we are knocking on the doorstep here, less than a month, less than 30 days. And we know how the summer flies, too.
Yeah.
So before you know it, we're going to have the Bears and the Texans in Canton.
Dog, I can't wait for it. I'm so excited for I don't need to rush the summer. Right. I love the summer. I love being outside. I'm enjoying it. I still got a couple of summer events that I'm going to be getting to. I don't want to rush the summer. But it's just listen, Sundays aren't the same without football. I'm sorry. Like it's like. Baseball is one of the worst sports in the world to watch right now. Like Sunday night baseball is basically dead in my mind. We got a little Team USA stuff going on, but there's just nothing happening right now sports wise. I've resorted to literally just watching NFL Network. Like it's just on whatever they're talking about. I'm watching that. There's been a lot of old Hard Knocks on there. A ton of Rex Ryan content has been on my TV.
You know what I would do right now to watch a Cardinals Panthers game? Like,
dog, the worst of the worst, bro. Like last night, legitimately. Like,
everyone complains about these terrible Thursday night matchups. All right, you're not. If they dropped a random Thursday night matchup for us right now in the middle of July, they said, you know what, July 17th, you're going to get the Commanders and the Jaguars. We would be frothing at the mouth.
Oh my God.
For something like that.
You know what's crazy is right because the Bears get the extra week because we're getting it. Like we're almost gonna get hit with this again because by that last preseason game, you're yet again like, all right, dog, like let's like why are we still doing these? What is the formality on these preseason games here? Why are we still playing so many of these? Like
I've
by
seen
the time
Brett Rippin.
Yeah, dog. Like hey, listen, prime Brett Rippin content will be talked about on this show. I can guarantee it. But by the time we get to the regular season, dude, like the NFL knows how to do it though, right? It's like prepping that Thanksgiving dinner, right? You smell it all day.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time you actually get to it, it's almost like a ravenous hunger because it's like, you've been waiting for this and you've been thinking about the dinner for weeks at this point. Now it's like, okay, here we go. Now it's time to dig in. So, hey, they got us in a chokehold right now. And the one thing about this Bears upcoming training camp that's going to be so interesting is everything that's going into it. And we got a little bit of conversation from Adam Schefter on with Carmen and Yurko the other day. That may have made my ears perk up, and I think most Bears fans' ears perk up on the Caleb Williams contract situation. Both him and Rome Odunze still unsigned. Hear what Adam Schefter had to say about it.
Have made it such that these rookie deals are formalities, but Caleb Williams really wants to kind of do his own thing, break the system, try to do things that are atypical. And so that wouldn't surprise me, you know, if his situation lingered a little bit longer than most of these rookie situations that should be in this day and age just formalities. Rome Odunze, you know, that'll get done. And it used to be, well, the Bears did change their front office quite a bit, but the Bears would have their draft picks on the week after the draft. And now these guys are unsigned, but it won't be long, I would imagine, before they have their deals done.
First off, that picture of Schefter, if you're not watching on the YouTube side, my God, what's going on here? Like, is he modeling here? Where's the what tunnel was he in on that one? But hearing from Schefter that, you know, this may go a little bit differently. The contract negotiation that the Chicago Bears are undergoing here with Caleb. He believes that the Roma Dunze deal is one that probably ends up getting done even quicker than the Caleb deal does. But the fact that he says that Caleb kind of wants to do his own thing, break the system, do things that are atypical. Is this something that you think Bears fans should be concerned about as we're heading into the season?
So if it were just Caleb Williams that was unsigned, I would say no. But I do have an inkling of unsettlement because they've got two guys, two first-round picks in this slotted system that cannot be challenged, really. Maybe like a little bit of language here or there. But the fact that it hasn't been done for two guys is just a little odd to me. I'm not upset about it. I'm not worried about it. I think everything irons itself out in time for camp in a couple weeks. But it's just a little odd that there's two guys. And we know right. Caleb's different, right? He goes about his business a different way. He doesn't have a traditional agent. He likes to be a different type of dude out there, whether it's business, whether it's on the field, what have you, whether it's off the field. He likes to be different. And what like that's just the way it's going to be. That's how the Caleb experience probably is going to be in Chicago.
Yes.
But the fact that there's two guys that are unsigned at this point, it's just a little odd to me, and especially for a team that's had issues in the past getting rookies signed. I believe Jaquan Brisker had an issue a couple years ago. Yeah. We know Roquan Smith had an issue when he was a first-round pick. But they also got rid of Cliff Stein, too, who I think was one of the guys that was sort of behind the scenes of a lot of these contract negotiations. So I'm just a little curious as to why there's a holdup with not one, but two guys and two first-round picks on this team as we head into training camp.
Here's why, and maybe this is me being conspiracy theorist or whatever, but or maybe just thinking a little bit too deeply on it, but I don't think it even goes to the point where I'm concerned because we know that this offseason, while yes, it's about making players making the team, Bears players being able to go out there and prove who they are, Caleb Williams being able to go out there and show what's happening around show where he's at development-wise. Mm-hmm. We know what's happening around this team, and there has to be a story. And there really isn't a major story outside of the elephant in the room of Caleb Williams is the new guy on the block. Is he going to be the Bears quarterback that gets things done? But with Hard Knocks in the building, there's got to be some kind of story heading into camp. The first episode comes out August 6th, so there's going to be a ton of camp stories. I wouldn't be surprised if this is a, hey, can you guys not sign those contracts until Hard Knocks is recording? Like, I think that this is as simple as that because to me, right, maybe there's some issues in the language, and we've seen that, but there's no chance in my mind that Caleb Williams is not signed before training camp starts. There's no chance in my mind that Roma Dunze is not signed before training camp starts because neither of those guys can participate in training camp if they are not signed by the time that training camp starts, and we know that the Bears don't want that to be the situation. More than likely, usually these things are language things, right? It's like, okay, but what? I don't want this here. I want this here. Can this money come at this time instead of this time? Off-season money, can it be this instead of this? And I do think that Caleb's the kind of guy that's like, I know that rookies have done that forever, but I'm good with not doing that. Like, let's do something different here. But I also think that there's a part of this that it has to be a part of the story. It has to play into the story. There has to be something that can be drummed up so that when we get that music right before a commercial break, if you're watching on the regular HBO, right? Like, then all of a sudden it's freaking some drama, some suspense. And then by the end of the episode, Caleb Williams is signed.
I appreciate a good conspiracy. I don't know if I'm buying that.
You're not following that line.
I appreciate a good conspiracy. But no, I think it's just,
what do you think the issue is right now? What do you think the issue that's holding this all up is?
I'm not going to pretend like I know. Like, I really don't know. I'd imagine it's something in the offset language because there's nothing you can really haggle with.
Right.
For a large part of what these contracts are, everything is so cut and dry with the way that these rookie contracts are formatted now. But I will say, if you ask me, would the Bulls sign their first round pick before the Bears? I would not have thought that would have been the case, but that's it right now, right? And I think that's
a heck of a breakdown of it, honestly. Yeah.
They signed theirs before the Bears signed either of their two guys. So, No, it's just curious to me that Rome isn't signed. And maybe that's something that figures itself out. Hell, it could happen before we stop the recording here. Like, that's just the way that these contracts can move. Sometimes it can all be done at the drop of a hat. But I'm not going to be worried about it until people start missing time. And we're not at that point where people are missing time yet.
And I think that's the thing for me, right? If it turns into training camp time is missed, if it turns into valuable time on the field is missed, especially when you're talking about your QB1, that's when I'm more concerned about it. Right now, though, I don't see this as a big issue. And I get it, right? I you hear Schefter in there. He talks about, you know, normally this is done quickly. Normally the Bears have guys signed a week after training camp. Or a week after the draft, I should say. Yeah. But you brought up some great names. It hasn't been that for a while here, right? We haven't seen the Bears do that. We've seen the Bears struggle to get Roquan Smith signed because of offset language. We've seen that with Jaquan Brisker because of offset language. And yeah, you get them done before training camp, and the Bears have a history of that, which maybe also goes into setting my mind a little bit more at ease. But at the end of the day, if we're just still sitting here in the off season and, like, I get it, you get antsy and you want to, especially for the content creators, they want to do a video on Caleb Williams signed his deal, Rome Odunze signed his deal. Everybody's ready to drop that content. But until we get to a point where time is missed, it means nothing. If he signs it today or he signs it the day before training camp starts, he's still prepping himself. But Caleb Williams at no point isn't preparing for the season here. Rome Odunze still prepping to go out there and try and be your number one or number two wide receiver this year, and whether it works out for him or not, right? Nothing changes whether it's signed today or it's signed, in my mind, when the cameras start rolling, but the day before training camp gets here.
Right. It's one of those things, and like you said, there's no noise with this Bears team right now in terms of like a negative light. There's buzz, but there's no noise right now about, oh, this guy is unhappy with a contract. Oh, this guy is thinking about a camp holdout. Oh, like there's no noise. And this is the closest thing that there is to noise. And quite frankly, it's not much of an issue until we get a little bit closer or once the start of training camp happens. And if guys aren't participating as a result of it.
And look, I mean, if we're being 100% honest, we've got guys who are under contracts for $10 million who we're not sure are going to participate in practice on this team. You know what I mean? Like, we got bigger issues to worry about right now than the rookies. But no, I'm not in the slightest worried about this. I think that it's nothing right now. And we'll see what it ends up being. Let us know your thoughts in the comments below. Do you think that this could be a issue for the Chicago Bears? Type yes. Type Y for yes and for no if you think that this could be a problem. Also, drop a bear dime just because, man. Let's keep this thing moving along. You throwing the claw up there with the good hand. With the good hand. Not bad. You gotta. You don't want the wilted claw out there, man. You don't want the wilted claw. That's how Rome throws it. It's very... Very lackluster.
Yeah, he's got a very feeble claw. Yeah.
Yeah. It's more creeper than it is claw. It's kind of concerning.
I feel like JJ Watt, though. Like, I've got the block on my hand right now.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to use it to your advantage, like he did. Just smack guys upside the head with it. That's exactly what JJ was doing. Let's keep this thing moving along, though, man, because we got a lot of really good play callers in this league. I thought this was a really good topic. When you're talking about evaluating kind of where the Bears are, we've got to look at the NFC North. Of course, you look at the teams around the league, and it's so weird because every story that we're getting now is very twofold or two-sided, I guess, where it's like when you look at PFF, when you look at The Athletic, when you look at, you know, even ESPN on the website, right? Like, all of the stories are like, look at this. The Bears have this. They've done this. They're so exciting. We can't wait. Okay, where do you rank them? 19th. That's not exciting. When I look at the Bears play caller right now, the play caller quarterback combination compared to the NFC North, while I am very excited about this team a lot of times, you really don't get to kind of sit there and say, okay, well, this is actually where I have these guys, until you make a list and you kind of start looking at the accomplishments of the teams on that list. So we're going to go through the quarterback play caller combinations in the NFC North and see where the Bears rank with Shane Waldron and Caleb Williams. Tyler, I'll start it off with you. Who is your best play caller quarterback combination in the NFC North right now?
To me, number one, and frankly, it was not very close at all. It is Matt LaFleur and Jordan Love.
I hate it so much, but yeah.
I think that what you saw last year is no fluke for Jordan Love. And sure, there were some stumbles out of the blocks early in the season. That Raiders game on Monday Night Football was atrocious. But if you look at the basically like second half of the season, Jordan Love looked like one of the five best quarterbacks in football. Yeah. And for Bears fans, it's kind of like, again, we're doing this again. But it might be the case.
We can fight back now, but we'll see.
And I look at what he did in terms of being an elevator. And it's something that I think that we saw out of the last couple of guys. Like the last crop of receivers that and the guys that Aaron Rodgers worked with were fine players. The guys that Jordan Love is working with are fine players. But there's no stud in that room. You're working with a lot of low-end twos, high-end threes in that receiver room. And it didn't matter if there was injury. I mean, Christian Watson, we know, missed plenty of time last year.
I was going to say, that's probably the one stud you may have, and he's never on the field.
And he's going to, like, hamstring therapy to, like, even out his hamstrings now, which I'm actually very interested to see how that experiment works out this year. If he is a clean slate of health this year, if there are no hamstring pulls for him, I'm going to be very, very interested to see how many players follow suit after. But anyway, there's no stud in that room. And he could make each one of those guys have moments where they looked like ones. Hell, Bo Melton had his moment in the sun as well. Like, they could pull guys up from the practice squad. And to me, that's why Jordan Love is clearly the number one quarterback in the division. And I think Matt LaFleur, when he wasn't being told what to do in the Aaron Rodgers tenure and now kind of could do the actual coaching, I think we learned he's a pretty damn good coach. I know there's some people who may have had their doubts about how good was Matt LaFleur as a coach during the Aaron Rodgers era. Was he a coach or was he a caddy? And I think now we've learned that he is a coach and he's a damn good one. Paired with Jordan Love, they were making some really, really good things happen out there. So by far and away, the Packers are my number one.
I hate it so much because I agree with you. And I think it is because of, I don't even know if we can call it the emergence, but maybe the liberation of Matt LaFleur, right? Because I think, like you said, so many people looked at LaFleur and were like, okay, yeah, like you're good, but like, it's because Aaron Rodgers is there. Nobody expected Jordan Love to be able to come in and set the world on fire the way he did. But and I don't think that it's just, listen, I think that Jordan Love is talented. I always thought, right, there's a talent in there. You just got to figure out, okay, is it going to be ready to go this season? Is he going to be a good player, right? Is he going to be able to fit in right away with what this team is doing? And the fact that he was able to sit for 3 years, understand the system, it took him a couple of weeks to figure out, okay, this is how this relates to actually doing it on the field. But how Matt LaFleur handled even that, right? And that's, to me, the sign of a good play caller. My quarterback's struggling. I need to make his life a little bit easier. Jordan Love, right, I believe his first pass of his career was an overthrow that could have been, or maybe no, I believe it hit Christian Watson in the hands, but it was like they didn't expect him to punch him in the mouth. And so everybody thought it was going to be set on fire. Here comes Jordan Love. Christian Watson drops it though. But after that, right, there was some stumbles and it was like, okay, he got that, but he's not there yet. We can't just keep trying to attack downfield. Let's shorten the field up. Let's run the football a little bit more. Let's use our running backs as much as we can until he understands it. Once it clicked for him, though, Matt LaFleur didn't hold him back either. He didn't live in that moment that happened at the beginning of the season. He didn't live in those games within the first 4 weeks where you were 1-4. He was like, all right, he's starting to understand it. Now I'm going to allow him to spread his wings a little bit and see how far he can fly. He got him to he got him into the playoffs. He got him through a couple of rounds of the playoffs, right? He dominated that Dallas team last season. Like, those are the things that I think stand out to me about a good play caller. It's the one thing that I hated here about having Luke Getsy was even when it felt like, and what, no matter where you're at on the Justin Fields debate, even when it felt like Justin was starting to get it, Luke Getsy wouldn't let him go. He wouldn't let him start to spread his wings at all. And so I hope we don't see that here with Shane Waldron and the Caleb Williams dynamic. I hope that if Caleb starts to get it, we're not sitting here trying to hold him back because we're scared of what it could look like if our first round pick, if our first overall pick looks bad out there on the field. Let him go through the struggles. Let him figure it out.
And I think the other thing with Love, too, is that he dealt with a lot of injuries, not just the receivers, but Aaron Jones missed a lot of time. And for a young quarterback, having that dependable running back, especially one that can catch passes out of the backfield as well, was something that was missing. He didn't have that reliable check down option. I mean, A.J. Dillon is not that guy. And he had injuries along the offensive line. So he dealt with all of that. And while he struggled a little bit out of the gates, largely, it was a great season. He threw for 4,200 yards, 30 touchdowns. Both of those would be franchise highs in Chicago Bears history. So you just look at what he was able to accomplish in year one after sitting behind them. And here's the thing, too. By the time that Andy Reid retires, we may be looking at Jordan Love and Matt LaFleur as the number one quarterback play calling combo in all football. Right now, it's no doubt about it. It's Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. But I think that I don't know how long Andy's got. Is it going to be 2 years, 3 years, five? Like, who knows how much longer Andy Reid's going to be coaching in the NFL? But when that time comes, with the development of Jordan Love and with even more of the hands-on that Matt LaFleur is going to be able to provide, I think that could very well be the number one play caller quarterback combo in all football.
It's tough to argue. Jordan's got to keep playing at that level, but that could be.
And it also depends who Mahomes coaches. Like, let's say Sean McVay does the thing where he disappears on TV for a couple of years and says, I'm going to go to Kansas City. then it's okay. Then it's not going to be.
There could be some changes in there that make it make more sense. Now, that's a tough one, but it's tougher to find a better combination than those two. Especially in the NFC North, but like in the NFC as a whole, in the league as a whole, like it's a tough take, but I almost think I agree with you. We'll see.
And again, I'm not saying it's right now.
It's not right now. It's definitely not right now.
But when Andy Reid retires and let's say Matt Nagy falls upward into the head coaching spot again, like that's going to be, it's not that one.
Yeah, it's definitely not Nagy. Nagy will still be calling Andy Reid like while he's on the sideline, like, what should I run here? You're watching the game, right? Like, no, I'm at a Denny's, dog. Like, leave me alone.
Who do you got? Talkies with him in the parking lot at
Arrowhead. He's got a direct line in his headset that goes to Andy Reid's phone. Andy, I need help, please. Come on, help me. I'm retired, Matt. Leave me alone. Who do you got number two?
Number two is also pretty easy for me as well. I have Ben Johnson and Jared Goff as the number two play caller quarterback combination. I think Ben Johnson kind of continued the progression of Jared Goff. He threw for 4,500 yards, 30 touchdowns. I believe he was second in all of passing touchdowns in football last year, or in passing yards in football last year. And Jared Goff, I think, is showing that he can be, with the right coaching situation, can be that sort of advanced level of a Kirk Cousins, a Tua Tagovailoa type of quarterback. He can be like in that echelon there. And I think it's kind of Purdy-esque too, where, listen, these guys aren't superstars. They're not game-breaking talents within the league. But if you pair them with the right play caller, they can be damn good quarterbacks. And I think we saw that with Jared Goff last year. The one thing that will concern me a little bit with Goff is the difference of playing inside versus playing outside. And I think he doesn't go outside this season until week 12, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. It is quite some time before he plays a true outdoor game.
First ice, right? At Soldier Field, I think, where he has not done well.
Right. So I think that's okay. I want to see you play a little bit outdoors, but his retort could be, well, the Super Bowl is played inside. And if we have the one seed, then I'll be inside for the entirety of the playoffs. I think that what we saw, I think Jared Goff had some good seasons in LA, and I think it's because he was coupled with a great play caller, and he's had some good seasons in Detroit now, and I think it's because he's coupled with a great play caller in Ben Johnson. I'm going to be very fascinated to see how the graduation of Ben Johnson going to being a head coach, it's going to happen at some point. It may be next, it very well could be next year. I can't imagine him sitting out two head coaching cycles without getting a job.
Yeah, I think
three head coaching cycles without getting a job. When that happens, when that shoe finally falls, we could see Jared Goff take a little bit of a dip depending on who comes in there and is responsible for calling the plays.
No, 100%. I think that, first off, agree. Clearly the number two. I think the first two were the easy ones. The big thing about what I got to give Ben Johnson credit on and why he's such a good play caller to me is, listen, last season was not Jared Goff's best season. He had a season that was better when he was with the Rams, 4,600 yards, 32 touchdowns, 12 interceptions that season, had a 101 quarterback rating, 64% completion percentage. But what was different about that was you saw the difference in Jared Goff last season, where in the Rams situation, if pieces were missing, it was like, this is not going to be good for Goff. Yeah. The second Todd Gurley went down, it was like, they got no running game. Like, he's in trouble. He's not going to be able to still be that level of quarterback. The drop off to me was very precipitous between, you know, when he had his best guys out there and when he didn't. And I know a lot of people say, well, that's all quarterbacks. That happens all around the league. Last season, though, Jared Goff to me, when major pieces were missing on his offense, still looked like one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, still looked like an MVP candidate, looked like a quarterback that was like, I understand that he's not here, but you know what? We're going to turn you into something because we need you to win us this game this week. And we didn't see that from him for so long. And to be able to do that with a quarterback who had been in the league at that point, what was last year? His eighth season in the NFL, and you're talking about before he had Ben Johnson, basically 5 years in the NFL, to be able to do that and turn a quarterback from a guy who I thought went from a good quarterback, like we said, a Kirk Cousin, a game manager type of quarterback, to what I would call a game changer type of quarterback last season. I thought that was really, really interesting to see. And I had to give, I don't give Detroit credit for much, but I give them credit for that because I think that being able to change a quarterback that far into his career, it speaks to something special about the play caller that you have. And Jared Goff being able to do that and execute that, it speaks to something special there as well. And so I agree with you. They're the second best. Now, here's where the question mark comes in, right? Because the Bears are the unproven. And that's really why they're down here at the bottom right now. Until we know something, we can't sit here and say they're the best duo in the NFC North. It makes no sense. We've seen the other two be successful at a high capacity. But then you look at the Vikings. Yeah, Kevin O'Connell. And we don't even know who the quarterback is. Are we going Sam Darnold? Are you going J.J. McCarthy? Who's playing quarterback over there? Who is the third best play caller quarterback unit in the NFC North right now, Tyler?
To me, I am going to go with the Chicago Bears, and it's ever so slightly, and it comes with a little bit of a caveat as well, but I don't think it matters which quarterback is playing for the Vikings. I think the Bears have the advantage at quarterback, and even though I think Kevin O'Connell is a better play caller than Shane Waldron, yes, I think it's one of those cases where it's about the Jimmys and Joes, not the X's and O's. And I think that having the quarterback advantage is more important than it is to have the play caller advantage here. And I think we'll see the results bear that out as well this year. I know I'm kind of cheating with this, but the supporting cast around the Chicago Bears, I think, is slightly better than what you have in Minnesota, especially given that TJ Hockenson is going to miss some time, it seems like. So for me, I'm going to give a slight edge to the Chicago Bears right now, largely due to who the quarterback is. I think that Kevin O'Connell certainly can change that narrative as well. I mean, if Sam Darnold or J.J. McCarthy go out there and look just as good as Caleb Williams, then I think, well, then if all things are equal, when we see the production play itself out, then I think that the Vikings are going to be third, because I think that given what's around both guys, even though, yeah, the Vikings, they have Justin Jefferson and they've got some good pieces along the offensive line and they signed Aaron Jones in the offseason. Like, there's good pieces around them, but I still think the Bears have the edge in that department, and I think they have the edge at quarterback, and it's significant. So for right now, I'm putting the Bears at three, but if we see even production, I think the Vikings are deserving of that third.
Well, listen, if we see even production out of Sam Darnold and JJ McCarthy, something went wrong here. Like, let's be 100%.
It very well could be both are good. Like, maybe JJ McCarthy is just good. That, like, that's certainly something that's in the realm of possibility. It's not what I'm predicting is going to happen, but we've seen quarterbacks sometimes take the league by storm right out of college, and sometimes we aren't expecting it right away. CJ Stroud certainly comes to mind with that. We thought maybe he could be good, but we didn't think he'd be that good. And Justin Herbert, another one who we didn't know how good he was going to be, but we certainly didn't think he was going to be that good. And I think especially with what you saw, and Justin Herbert, a lot of his collegiate tape, it kind of feels McCarthy-ish in terms of we haven't really seen him do a whole lot. And then it was like, oh, maybe he was just being held back a little bit in college. And maybe that's the case with McCarthy. Could totally go the other way as well, and he's just terrible. Like, both are on the table for Minnesota right now. But as for the quarterback advantage, I think that's the most important part of this exercise. So that's why I'm giving the Bears a third spot.
I think what's so interesting about the Vikings, and I would – it's tough because I do believe that Kevin O'Connell is a better play caller than the I not to say it's not close, but I think that if I had my choice of play callers – I would take all three of the guys on this list before I would have taken Shane Waldron, right?
Well, you know what? The other part of that, too, is I think Kevin O'Connell is closer to second than he is to fourth.
Yeah.
On this
list. As far as being the play caller in the NFC.
Yes, I think he's a very, very – he's very good at his job. And the fact that he's kind of patched together some of these offenses with Josh Dobbs and whenever there were injuries to Kirk Cousins, the fact that he's been able to patch everything together at times and keep the ship afloat and even have a chance at the playoffs near the end of some of these seasons and not finishing last in the division, given some of the injuries he's had to put up with. I mean, think about it. Last year, he was without Kirk Cousins and Justin Jefferson for a significant portion of time, and he did not finish last in the division.
Yeah.
I think that speaks volumes.
It does. It speaks to who he is as a play caller, who he is as a player. Like, I agree with you 100% on that. Or who he is to his players, I should say. I agree with you 100% on that. Like, and I think the I don't know if it's a fear, but the one thing that I see the Vikings maybe being able to tweak some success out of is, can you get that Sam Bradford Minnesota season out of Sam Darnold? Because Sam Darnold came in as a highly touted prospect. He was not supposed to be what he has turned into in the NFL. And we just talked about, now Jared Goff was a very different quarterback. He had had success. He had been to a Super Bowl. But we just talked about how getting the right coach with you can set you right. Everybody's looking at JJ McCarthy to be the guy. My thing is, like, if I look at Sam Darnold, can he hit Justin Jefferson in the hands? Can he hit Jordan Addison in the hands? Because if he can, you can do a lot with this offense.
Yeah.
So, like, that is my one, like, this is why I think that the NFC North has kind of come back into being the black and blue division. Because to me, I have a question mark on the Vikings. But outside of that, I think the Bears are going to be a good football team this season. Maybe not a great football team, but a good football team. I think they've got a lot of games that can keep them in the divisional race early on in the season. I think that the Packers are going to be a good football team. I think that the Lions could be a great football team this season. And my God, if, like, Sam Darnold can hit Justin Jefferson in the hands, like, you got the best wide receiver in the NFL standing on the other side of you. It makes it very, very difficult to call a clear-cut winner in this. I will go Bears 3 here, but it's almost like a reluctant, like, I can't put the Bears 4th. I can't put them underneath Sam Darnold and J.J. McCarthy because you got Caleb Williams, but it's tough, man. It's tough. Let us know how you guys feel in the comments below. Let us know your thoughts. I mean, listen, when you look at the Bears, before we get out of here, when you look at the Caleb Williams, Shane Waldron combination, what is it about it that makes you feel like this may be the change that finally comes? Is it more Caleb than Shane Waldron, or is it you think that Shane Waldron will get the best out of this Bears offense?
Well, I think there's two things. I think it's Ryan Poles. I think Ryan Poles has done a good job to create a very cushy landing. And then on top of that, too, we've seen Shane Waldron have success with kind of turning around quarterbacks. It's something, too, that I think is worth bringing up in the Vikings case. Like, What if Kevin O'Connell can get a Geno Smith first season in Seattle type of season out of Sam Darnold?
You know what I'm saying?
Who's the guy who got the first season of Seattle from Geno Smith? It's Shane Waldron. So if he can kind of put together and cobble together the same thing with what I think are better pieces in Chicago, then Caleb's in for, I think, a pretty soft little landing into the NFL as opposed to most first-round quarterbacks and specifically most first overall pick quarterbacks as well. But for me, and then, yeah, it's because Shane Waldron, even though he doesn't have success in my eyes as being some sort of elite guy in terms of play calling, it's not like he's without success. I mean, Seattle was a team that had zero expectations. If you remember that season, ESPN does their roster rankings every single year heading into the year. And it was, I believe, Bears 31, Seattle 32, or maybe it was flipped.
Yeah.
That Seattle team made the playoffs. And I think Pete Carroll's very good as a head coach, but Shane Waldron, I think, kind of helped bring along a quarterback that, quite frankly, given his track record, had zero business being a starting quarterback in the NFL. And he turned him into a Pro Bowler that year. And I think that speaks volumes to a little bit of what Shane Waldron can be as a play caller in this league. Now, he didn't parlay that into a second year, but maybe with a little bit more talent at quarterback, which Caleb Williams has more talent than Geno Smith.
Yeah.
With a little more talent at quarterback, it may need a little bit of time, but I'm much more bullish on what he can create here in Chicago than what he had in Seattle.
We'll see, man. I'm excited. I'm ready for the season to get started. I'm ready to see where these guys will realistically rank when the dust settles, but not too fast, because I'm not ready for football season to be over yet. That means we got to start talking about training camp, draft, all that. Let's just get to the season. I'm taking it one step at a time, though. Let's get to training camp. Let's take all that in. Appreciate y'all for plenty of Brett Rippin coming your way. Appreciate y'all tuning in, showing love. Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave a 5-star review. Y'all know what to do. Let us know where you rank the play caller quarterback combinations in the NFC North right now. For Tyler Rocky, it's your boy Pat the Designer, back at it again. Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. We'll be back tomorrow with Jason McKee